Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Regular Legislative Meeting, Part 1 of 3 Parts, November 15, 2016.
To read a statement to the community, which I will be posting online tomorrow morning and sending to our community members. I want to take a moment to address the national landscape that currently surrounds us. For the last 10 months now, our country has witnessed the deterioration of decency, respect, and kindness from key figures. As a nation, we split into two, leaving us with no other option but to carry the enormous weight of a philosophical divide. In the past week, our division widened, yielding incidences of racism, anti-Semitism, and sexism across the country. While it is acceptable for us as a country to have different opinions, it will never be acceptable for us to give in to prejudice and bigotry. Last week, several school districts in our Commonwealth were challenged by acts of intolerance. This past Friday, Governor Wolf, in addressing such acts, said, "What has occurred at schools across Pennsylvania is overt racism, and my administration will do everything it can to end it and prevent it from happening in the future." Governor Wolf, in his November 11th message, stated that no child should feel unsafe in his or her school. I must underscore the basic premise of the governor's simple yet powerful statement about our children and their right to feel safe while receiving their education. I am sad to share that Cheltenham School District has not been immune to hurtful words in recent days. Such words chip away at our community's sense of safety and therefore had to be taken seriously. Because this situation is a personnel matter, I'm unable to comment on it specifically. However, the board administration wish to be clear that we will take all steps necessary to make sure that all district employees conduct themselves in an appropriate and non-discriminatory manner at all times. This administration will thoroughly investigate and administer consequences of any violation of board policies prohibiting harassment or discrimination based on race in a manner with respect to the rights of all persons involved. In the past year, I've invited several individuals to work with our district to help us learn and grow. Dr. Ali Michael, Dr. Barbara Moore Williams, and Mr. Louis Loro, three nationally recognized experts in their fields, have become critical partners in our effort to become a much more culturally proficient and mindful school district. With them at our side, we are unpacking the complex science of implicit bias, gaining a true understanding of what it means to value diversity, and learning how to self-regulate during our most trying times. We are diligently committed to such meaningful work. This past summer, a cadre of 50 teachers signed on to increase their cultural proficiency under the guidance of Dr. Barbara Moore Williams. They did that hard work of looking inward and investing in multiple days of authentic decisions or discussions about how tolerance or intolerance in all of its divisive forms impacts teaching and learning. This week, I have charged each of our principals with the task of creating in their schools that allow for healthy dialogue to take place. Working together, we'll make certain that our students, parents, guardians feel safe enough to talk openly about their personal experiences while members of our Cheltenham family. They will also feel secure enough to report any acts of intolerance or aggression, no matter how bold or subtle. Tomorrow, I am meeting with our high school students engagement committee, a diverse group representing 9th and 12th grade students. We will have a courageous and honest discussion on the national landscape means to them as young adults. It is my intent to our representatives that work them to design and spread a message of harmony, hope, acceptance in our school. We, of course, will continue our commitment to such cornerstone Cheltenham District programs such as No Place for Hate, Rainbow of Friends, and Pride as they promote positive messages to our students about how to treat others. It is often said that Cheltenham is a microcosm of our country because of our diversity. If we absolutely believe this to be true, then we must model that harmonious diversity looks like so that others can follow our lead. As a community, we must invoke great levels of understanding, acceptance, collegiality, compassion, and open-mindedness because those are the tenets our country was founded upon. As a school district, we must live up to the Cheltenham High School's mission of fostering through an education of exceptional quality, the intellect, culture, and individuality of every student who passes through its doors. If we meet these goals, then we can surely say that we achieved something great in Cheltenham and subsequently act as a collective group of teachers for countless others. I will be sending this out to our community members tomorrow, the statements that I have read. So I want to move into the section where I talk about the things that are taking place, and I want to share a PowerPoint presentation really quickly with a trip that we recently took as part of our instructional model and in practice. On October 26th, as a district, we had the opportunity through the support of the Avalon Foundation to take members of the board and some administrators to High Tech High, one of the nation's leading districts in project-based based learning. And this is a commitment that we have made through our strategic plan and using multiple modalities in terms of trying to connect the curriculum to our students in very different and meaningful ways. We have moved forward with working to implement project-based learning as a key focus in our instructional delivery. We understand the importance of what project-based learning does and how it promotes creativity, problem-solving, critical thinking, meaningful collaboration, and exploring real-world problems. Today, we have been working really hard to create a number of learning experiences that support that work. We have a great link on our website that documents some of the work we're doing. We have a cadre of teachers who have taken the leap of faith to be early adopters of this instructional practice. We have begun to host meetings and conversation with parents to introduce them to this new model of instructional delivery. And we're excited about the opportunity to talk about a pilot program that we're going to start next year with the hopes of expanding that through all parts of our curricular practice. I once again, we spent on October 26th when members of the board left, we spent 3 days in San Diego with unprecedented access to the school and everything that and that they do. And here's our team at the airport, and when we first arrived at High Tech High, from there we, there's a number of pictures that you see where we were taking on a tour, where you see many of our board members engaging in conversation that were led by High Tech High students. What's unique about this school is their ability to, bless you, really provide really authentic learning experiences while simultaneously unattended meeting state standards, though that's not a priority for their school, but however, outperforming every other school in San Diego. So it goes to show you the power of what it means when you connect really authentic work without having to necessarily test prep. Here are some additional pictures of what you see as the ethos around project-based learning is the demonstration, the visibility of the work that students do. I don't believe that there was a hallway that you walked down that you could find space to put something on because it was decorated with projects and pictures and mechanisms that represent the learning that students participated in. Throughout the buildings, K-12, there were core fundamental tenets that reminded students every single day what were the core values of the school. So it's often doesn't have to be said because it's everywhere in every piece of literature, in every writing, in every poster, and classroom. And I have to tell you, I've never seen high school bathrooms and elementary bathrooms decorated in the way I see that school. It's absolutely phenomenal with the pictures, the music that plays back there that gives students a sense of this is your home and this is how you're represented in it. Here is a number of projects that students work on, and each student being responsible for a component of a much larger project in bringing those pieces together, while simultaneously learning math, learning science, learning English, learning social studies, learning the arts, learning music. Everything happens all simultaneously as they bring all of those pieces together and not in the traditional silo. So it's an exciting way of thinking about it and the success that they have. Here, small print that you can't see, part of the requirement of being a student and here is at High Tech High and the workshop school too, because we have visited the workshop school, which is right down the street from us, doing phenomenal work as well, is what does your work mean to the larger community? And civic engagement was a fundamental core part of that. I'm not sure how the students found the 400 to 500 hours of community service that was required as part of being a member of the community, and that goes across the board. It varies in terms of hours for elementary, middle, and high, but everyone saw themselves in part of the greater good. This was a project that students wanted to work on that spoke about the homeless population in San Diego. And they began to uncover from a socioeconomic, political structure, what is happening, how it works. One group of students decided as they were learning about the political structure, the economic, the emotional structure that creates individuals who become homeless, they decided that they were gonna do a tiny project, tiny house project. So students began to build tiny homes around San Diego as part of their project. Part of that incorporated the science behind how to build it. Part of that created a written literature piece on the history of that community. So it was fascinating to see how they brought everything together in that piece. Here's additional work that you see with students, each project having a meaning tied deeply into the core content. Everyone actively involved in that particular process, not really paying too much attention to somewhat static process in which many districts adopt and still outperform their peers in every single academic measure. So it's exciting to be part of that and to see that one of the wonderful things about that is when we visited High Tech High and all of its schools, elementary, I was fascinated to be able to talk to a sixth grader who I thought really was in middle school, or a six-year-old, I should say, who was talking about a project they were doing, and I thought they were a middle school student, in terms of the way they were able to articulate what they were doing. There was a project, I was walking through the middle school, and two students approached me and said, and I was walking through, they didn't know who I was, and they said, sir, can we please talk to you about the project that we're doing? And I was like, sure. So they came up and they said, we're learning about the science around how to make soap and what that looks like. And I said, fascinating. I said, tell me more. And they're like, well, in addition to that, we also were tasked to start a business. So we had to write a business plan on how to market that. In addition to that, we had to create a website where we would document and take pictures of the products that we sell. And then in addition to that, we had to reach out to community vendors and ask for them to shelve our products in their stores. We had to monitor how those products were being sold and communicated with those community local stores. And then they said that they had to then, part of their work was taking the proceeds of that project and donating it to a nonprofit organization that the team identified as a core resource. So really fundamental ways in which students were identifying. The way they use space is extremely interesting. You wouldn't notice you were walking into a traditional school. Student seating was everywhere. There was the ability to see as though you're sitting in your living room and you're just having a conversation about art or science. So we were excited to have those particular opportunities and the functionality of space and more projects and more students eager to talk to us. So we were extremely excited. That picture on the right, where Chula Vista overlooking the border, was extremely beautiful campus that we participated in, that we had opportunity to walk through. So we are really excited about the opportunity to think differently about our work. We want to thank the Avalon Foundation for not only hosting the trip, but paying for all of our board members to go and our educators. There's another trip that is scheduled with a group of teachers and the rest of the board to see that. That is going to take place relatively soon. We have a cohort of teachers who've been providing professional learning opportunities, as I said earlier, to be first adopters, and they're excited. They are going to spend 5 days in San Diego, enriched in this work. They also going to spend some summer time at the workshop school right down the street, supporting us as well. So I wanted to share that with you because it was such a wonderful trip and bring back some of the innovation that is happening afar, some that is happening close, and then tapping into some of the innovative practices that are happening inside our own buildings, in our own classrooms, and cultivating that as well. So it was a great trip. We look forward to sharing with the community and the board some additional opportunities that come with that. So I want to finish with that and move on, and I want to congratulate our marching band. The 2016 Cheltenham High School Marching Band Panthers won first place at the Cavalcade of Bands Championship for Liberty Division Group A. They were led by senior drum major Skylar Barton. The marching band Panthers scored a 93.15 to win first place and took home the awards for high visual, high overall effect, and best auxiliary color guard. And we thank the band and the teachers who support that. We also want to celebrate our MCC Presidential Symposium for Diversity on Poetry Contest winners. I know you've probably seen that on the website, so we want to congratulate our Chelan High School student, Kayla Stone, whose poem, Adopted, was chosen as one of the top five submissions in Montgomery County Community College's Presidential Symposium. And Kayla was invited to a special luncheon and panel discussion with critically acclaimed author Jacqueline Woodson for her award-winning submission. Also want to congratulate again Fred Fox. We had the opportunity to go to Eastern and participate in that celebration and that acknowledgement that an extraordinary young man and a shining example of wonderful work and wonderful students in our district. We also want to celebrate our Philadelphia Young Playwrights. Special congratulations goes out to all of our student playwrights whose work earned special awards and recognition from the Philadelphia Young Playwrights 2016 competition. Many of our winners will have their plays professionally directed and performed in Center City's finest theater spaces. So in all, Cheltenham produced 4 K-6 first place, 8 K-6 second, 4 K-6 third, 2 middle school monologue festival awards, 1 high school first place award winning play, 1 high school second place awarding play, and 1 high school third place award winning play. So congratulations. We also want to celebrate Elkins Park school tradition. For over 20 years, Elkins Park has offered its fifth grade students an amazing experience of sleepover overnight at Franklin Institute. This year's trip saw 310 students, 72 parents, 14 teachers, 2 administrators. I'm jealous, but my parents do not believe in sleepovers, so that did not happen for me. But congratulations. Maybe Cheyenne will have a different experience since I didn't have it. So congratulations for that wonderful tradition that continues. We also celebrate our fall theater performances. So congratulations to all those involved in the Cedarbrook Middle School production, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I hope many of you had an opportunity to go and check it out. The show was packed and received rave reviews from our audience members. This Friday or Saturday night, come see the Chelan High School present a Thurber Carnival by James Thurber. Curtain rise at 7:30, and tickets will be available at the door. We also want to celebrate our local veterans who joined us in schools last week, and the local heroes who came in to talk to our students, and we owe a special gratitude to all of our local past and present servicemen and women, with special thanks going out to the following individuals who personally interacted with our students last week. As a sibling of a Marine, I love my brother now more than I loved him before, in terms of the dedication and service, and we're thankful for the many tours that he has done across the world, and he's back with us. So we definitely want to thank our veterans for the work. Sergeant Bernard Carter, Quartermaster Joe Heath, Post Commander Tom Hermanson, Post Commander Mike Devlin, Lieutenant Colonel Keith Carter, and Captain Aaron Carter for their service and joining us and helping our students better understand the sacrifices of our veterans. Lastly, I want to remind community members, parents, and guardians that K-12 parent-teacher conferences are next week. So there are no classes for K-8 students on Tuesday, November 22nd. No classes for K-12 students on Wednesday, the 23rd, due to conference schedules. Schools and offices are closed on Thursday and Friday for the Thanksgiving holiday. That information is posted on our website, and I hope that everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving, and if parents have or guardians have the opportunity to share some moments of reflection based on what I spoke about earlier, where we are as a community, and to come together in solidarity, we need to make sure that hate in all forms of it do not DeBar, this wonderful community that has celebrated its diversity and has coined that as its earmark of excellence. Thank you.
Thank you for the thorough update, Dr. Marseille. I just want to say briefly that the board stands with you with regards to we're not going to tolerate any hate in our district, across the district, and we look forward to hearing about opportunities that are going to draw us together to overcome these things that have arisen here in our community. Everybody is very, very concerned about this, and we know that this is being handled expeditiously as a personnel matter. Thank you. Ms. Hagley.
Thank you. I think in light of the seriousness of the recent events, I wanted to share my thoughts very briefly. After the election last week, I know that there were many who were disappointed, fearful. They were generally at ease. There are some who were not with the election results. What has been occurring in our country with demonstrations, racist statements, post, text, many based on race, religion, gender, are absolutely unacceptable. Many of these comments, as everyone's aware, have been directed at non-African-American students on college campuses. My own son, who lives in New York, called me Tuesday night and said, "Mom, I'm scared." None of this activity, whether directed to African-Americans, women, Muslims, the Jewish community, our LGBT community, is acceptable. None of it is acceptable at all in Cheltenham, as this is not who we are as a community. As a school board member, I wanted to share publicly, and I think I'm speaking for the entire board, that we will not tolerate any actions that are directed at an individual, a student, a teacher, an administrator, or a parent that are racist, sexist, xenophobic, or otherwise make anyone feel uncomfortable or unwelcome in our schools. Our diversity is our strength. One of our major responsibilities as a board member is to establish and set policy. One of the other responsibilities for us to enforce that policy. With the recent events, I'm confident that the administration, given the circumstances and the information that they have, will take appropriate disciplinary action in this personnel matter. I support the administration's opportunity to provide students, teachers, and staff with a safe place for them to discuss and share their concerns, fears, and issues about recent events that have occurred in a direct and safe way. We need collectively to be supporting those students, those teachers, and the staff, and providing any necessary counseling that they may need and address their fears and concerns. I know that we are better than this, and I know that this is not who we are, and what we stand for in this beautiful, diverse community of Shelton. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hagley. All right, we will have public comments on agenda items only. If anybody has comments, questions about items that are spelled out on the agenda, please come forward. There will be a second opportunity for public comment on any item as it relates to the Cheltenham School District at the end of the meeting. Okay, I would like to move on, and we're going to have a presentation from the Montgomery County Planning Commission.
Thank you very much. My name is...
Before you start, can I put some context?
and to your presentation. A couple years ago, the district seeked out a demographic study to better understand and better prepare for the population growth in our district, related lack of growth. And when I arrived in July of last year, there were some components of that report that I felt were not complete, that did not provide the robust analysis we need to make really strategic long-term decisions about hiring, about facilities. So I spoke to Ms. Michaels and talked about and shared with the board the need to bring in a series of experts that can provide us with the type of analysis that we would need. And I've worked with the Montgomery County Planning Commission before, and because they are residents in Montgomery County and are very familiar with all of the factors that impact a demographic study, it wasn't someone flying in from 11 states away trying to understand our community, not saying that they couldn't do a thorough job, but I appreciate the fact that they, for lack of a better term, are boots on the ground and know our community. So I was happy to hear that they were available, because they're well sought after, as school districts every year do this analysis to refresh where they are. They were able to accommodate us during that time as we think critically about the decisions we have to make about staffing, around enrollment, and obviously around preparation for eventually a couple buildings that we have to think differently about, whether it is a renovation or construction. That is obviously Hopkins Park, even though Cedar Brook is on its way, and some modifications that we have to do to the high school. So I appreciate you guys coming out and giving us that. The full reports, which is voluminous, and I encourage the community to go through that as you think about what direction and some of the decisions the district is going to make in light of that, in light of that report. So we'll be made available online along with a very brief PowerPoint. We wanted to highlight some of this work without putting you through a 47-page report, but we wanted to give the key tenets of that report, but we will post it online. So, yes.
I was saying before we start, for the benefit of, we have such a big audience, could we kill a couple bites of lights here so that the screen is more visible?
Sure. Dr. Bob, you think you can help me with which of those legs will.
Current school year. Because as it turns out, the district has gained about 160 students over the last 5 years. However, half of that gain was in the last year. So I think that most recent data really is useful in really understanding what's going on with respect. When we do a study, there's some common factors that, and some of them are fairly obvious. What's going to provide growth or promote growth in a district? If you gain population, that's a strong indicator, although we often say it can differ. It depends what's happening with that school-age cohort. In Cheltenham, however, though, there is a pretty tight correlation. When you gain or lost population in your district, has generally kind of followed suit in that. If you add new housing to a district, that's going to produce, obviously, new population and often new school-age children to populate your schools. Increased birth activity is another telling indicator. As more kids are born, those that stay in the district through their preschooling years will end up being your future kindergarten, first grade, and so forth. And that'll add growth. That's a fortunate indicator because it's one that actually does let us peer into the future and let us see, you know, how that activity might pay off or impact future classes. And then shifting of age cohorts into more families with young children. This is partially, but seeing what happens with households and how you might have younger families replacing empty nesters and that kind of thing taking place over the course of time. We use a cohort progression model for this study, which is kind of an industry standard, and I'll touch on what that is in a few moments. But we also put a substantial amount of additional data that I think makes the report a little more reliable and more interesting. We're not only creating a model to try to guess the projections, we're also trying to understand what happened at this point, because that helps us understand what happened, what's going to happen in the future. Some of the data we use, birth data, being from the county, we have we're fortunate to have a lot of micro sales or micro housing data, both in sales, construction, and proposals. So we've happened to all that. We provide that with address and geospatial analysis to help us hone in on what's happening in different school buildings in the district. Anonymous student address record files that allow us to match that up and determine what's happening in specific developments and specific housing types, that was specific sales activity, and incorporate that. We do a multi-family inventory, which is one use of that data, which lets us see what's happening on again, with different housing types and how that's influencing public school enrollment. And then finally, of course, Census and American Community Survey data gives us an overview of the community. I want to touch on a couple factors that we've done almost all of the districts now in the eastern half of the county, what we often call mature suburbs, entering suburbs, built-out places. But I think those terms are sometimes misleading because you're starting to see a lot of redevelopment, a lot of some of the assets and benefits of living in this part of the county with its infrastructure, with its transit opportunities, with its employment centers, are really increasing in value. And you're seeing that with the younger generation, the millennials, but also some of the empty nesters are also going to appreciate that more, and places like Cheltenham fit into that. So that's driving some of the trends. When we look at these places in the eastern part of the county, a couple things have been jumping out fairly consistent across different districts. One is the private school enrollment. Overall, over time, it's been declining. And I say that going back to, say, 2000. In the last 10 to 15 years, in most places, you've seen a significant decrease in the amount of children going to private school over public. In Cheltenham, that has held true for the long term. However, recently, since about 2010, it's been fairly stable. And some years have actually grown a little as far as the data from both the district and the census tells us. And then the second point, market, as I mentioned, market specific facilitating new redevelopment and infill projects. So where you didn't have to see much opportunity for new housing, there are some big projects that come on in these communities. Cheltenham has a couple coming, not as many as some of the other districts, but long term there could be more, and you look at some of your institutional properties, and over an extended time, you could see new residential reuse populations. Three more public school students are originating out of existing multifamily developments. This is a trend that we really hit on being able to look at the address data. And a lot of districts, we've seen this kind of explode. Where school age population has been doubling out of a lot of these older, often apartments, so rentals are more commonly condos as far as students go, public students. And so looking at Cheltenham, we'll show that data tonight as well. But that trend also exists here. Home sales have increased since the recession. We've started to rebound countywide the last couple of years, and that in some places has generated more incoming students over outgoing students. And again, we'll highlight what's happening. So here's a slide that shows the graphic depiction of what's happening at different school levels. And this really jumped out at me the first time I saw it. We plotted the data, and you look at the K through 4 at top in the blue line at the top. How it's consistently grown over most of that 10-year period. At the end, it's kind of stabilized out, but you see that year after year, increasing size. And then you look at the 9 through 12, which is right below it, with the X's marked at the data points. And see kind of the opposite in general, a little more fluctuation, but overall a general declining trend up until the most recent year where you did have an increase in the senior high enrollment. If you couple the gains in elementary classes that have been happening with the declines in the older classes that are exiting, and that's an instant recipe for some growth. More at the beginning, less at the end, those that leave are less, and those that come in are more. So that's fairly obvious. And then in between, you see the 5, 6, 7, 8, which are more narrow bands, only two grades. So you see a bit more kind of fluctuation up and down, which is often expected when you have little middle students. They kind of follow each other in cycles, as you expect, with kids progressing through the system. Next, we wanted to look at the historical data for births. This kind of fits into our topic of millennial generation impact, as they are just now kind of moving into those childbirth years. And we highlight, first let me pinpoint the data. The birth data here goes back to 2000 up through the most recent school calendar year, which we use in order to get the most accurate data that corresponds to future kindergarten classes. And you can see how recent years are actually at a lower point than the district had been experiencing. The last 5 or 6 years, on average, are a bit lower than the past, up until the most recent data point, which did appear to rebound. You look at the county records, and it's fairly similar. You've seen a steady decline through the end of the last decade, through 2013. In the last 2 years, you've seen a bit of a rebound, but still well below what they had been. Our eye on this, and again, this is basically think of a given year when you see data as 6 years before the next kindergarten grade. So this 2010 class, this is your current kindergarten class that corresponds with these births. So a lot of this low activity has yet to make it to the public school level, but we can rely on that and say, okay, this is a lesser growth course when it comes to it, and how that those births turn into kindergartners and first graders. But we see for the future another pattern. This is data from the BBRPC, the Regional Planning Commission. They do forecasts out to 2040, and now they're actually 2045. And you can see, the actual data going through 2010, 2015, how we've seen the highest fertility cohort of females alone, aged 25 to 34. You see how that dropped after 2000, fairly substantially in 2005, and then it's been coming back up the last two periods to 2015, almost even with where it was in 2000. However, it's expected to continue, and this is the millennial generation. Like I said, they're the next, they are the current population bubble, and they're entering childbearing years. The expectation is that birth activity will increase. And I think that's an overall truth that we expect. Each district has a little bit of different character, and you know how many are there to begin with is a question, but I think the Child Haven represents the notion that you will see more birth activity as a result. Perhaps that bump we had in the most recent year is the start of that. Now Dan's going to tell you a little more about housing trends.
All right, so this is the other side of the coin that we're talking about when we try and incorporate extramarital factors that really refine our projection. So these are factors that we apply to current and future development proposals and potential developments to figure out how many students we might get from certain developments. This data is derived from the 2010 U.S. Census on their census block data. You can see that we have Montgomery County and Cheltenham District. Now, the notable absence in Cheltenham is of new units or a factor for new units. We don't have enough data or enough recent construction to really put an accurate factor on that. So we refer to the Montgomery County data, which is a pretty good average for the rest of the county. You can see that in Cheltenham, as it differs from their county, that single-family attached and single-family attached housing, attached housing being townhomes or twin homes, are actually neck and neck pretty much with the amount of students they contribute to the system, which is a little bit different than the rest of Montgomery County on average using single-family attached versus single-family attached. You can see that also too, multifamily development is significantly higher in its contribution to the public school system in Cheltenham as opposed to the county in general. However, it's important to note with this particular data set, it doesn't account for all of the multifamily units that we use that I will discuss in the next couple slides for multifamily. These only include blocks where there is only multifamily development on it. And due to the mature nature of Cheltenham's topology, there's a number of blocks that have incorporate multifamily, twin homes, and single-family attached blocks. They're not included. So this basically is a de facto range for your two largest apartment complexes in the township, Linwood Gardens and Towers of Linwood. So you can see that there's a significant amount higher than the rest of the county in general coming from those two particular developments. Moving on, you see housing construction. On average, over the last 5 years, there's been about 28 units per year. You can see that in the far right of the map right here, exactly. That is actually an age-restricted multifamily development that we do not include in our analysis because it doesn't have any contribution to the school district. You can see the singular single-family detached development that took place in the township is right here on Shelton Hill Drive. So there was really no significant single-family detached development in the last 5 years. The majority comes from this multifamily condo development on 1600 Church Road with 55 units, and the Reserve at Wingate, a 198-unit townhome development on the old Cedar Brook Country Club. Housing potential. Aside from the skewed nature of the map, you can see that these are the likely future developments that can add students to the school district. The ones in green are the ones that are either in construction or very likely to happen, and the ones in beige are ones that have the potential to give way to newer residential development. There are some that are in various stages of concept or plan. The only two guaranteed are Wingate 2, which is currently under construction, nearing completion, should be finished by early next year, sales should begin next year, and you should actually see impact probably in starting the 2017 school year. There's 28 single-family attached homes. As a part of that development, all districts of the Wing Code that will likely give about 9 grades to the district. Ashland Meadows is the only other project that is very likely to come to fruition in the next 5 years. It includes 90 single-family attached houses and 76 single-family attached for a total of 166 total units, a significantly sized development on the old country club on Ashland Meadows. It's an approved proposal, and it also has its equivalent dwelling 12 units approved by the township. So it is green to go. It has some in site design concerns and some environmental concerns they are currently working out, but it is likely to take shape in the next couple of years. Those are the two developments that will have an impact. Just speaking a little briefly on some of the other ones, you have Linwood Hall and Dominican Retreat, also known as the Old Elkins Estate. These are large parcels that are currently underutilized. They would need new zoning to allow for significant redevelopment. And they also have some mild historic preservation concerns and the like. That'll tie them up for the next couple of years, and you won't see any significant proposal probably within the next 5. Ashmore Estates, as far as I'm concerned now, I believe is in the proposal. The site is currently up for sale again. Lavrock Hill did not achieve that development, did not achieve zoning on the Springfield side of the site, which is necessary to build a single-family detached development geared towards families and the like. Now, because they don't have that zoning approval, the Cheltenham side of the site is likely to see age-restricted multifamily, so it's not going to have a large impact. And then lastly, the enclave at Crowland Farm is an approved proposal for 79 age-restricted units across from where Ashmore Meadows will be, but is not MCU use approved yet, so it's up in the air when it will actually start. And lastly, these are some of the other housing impacts that are revolving around sales. You can see that on the left, the graph on the left shows the existing housing sales between 2006 and 2015. So basically from right before the recession really took a turn, all the way up through the current recovery. Cheltenham Township, I happy to say has actually seen one of the better rebounds of all the townships in Montgomery County in terms of housing sales. You're very near and close to your pre-recession values. And this is likely to result in a net positive growth in the number of students. So we tried to hone in on that a little bit over three time periods, 2011, 13, and 15, using the address rosters that the school district gave us and the sales records that we have as a county planning commission through the Bureau of Assessment to see what students left the district and came into the district through housing sales in those three given years. And again, I'm happy to report that there is a positive net change in students in each of those years, a little bit variable more so than in other districts. But as of 2015, you had a net change in students of positive 42. So at the very least, homes without children, empty nesters, or homes with less children are giving way to homes younger family with more children. And then lastly, you see that multi-family developments with 10 units or more. This is a more comprehensive factor than the one that we had shown you earlier. While it's lower, it represents almost all of the multi-family units within the district and is a little more comprehensive. So you can see that in the last 6 years, there's been almost more than 200 students additional coming from the existing multi-family developments of this size. So it's going to likely continue to be significant.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.